from the presidency. So the minister will, as indicated before, that matter is not within her purview. We need to bring the Bay Bridge related matters, or rather the Bay Bridge matter and related matters, thereof to a logical conclusion. We need to proceed to other issues. Really, this can't be a perennial headache, a sore thumb for such an elongated period of time. The issues are very straightforward. We all know exactly what happened, and the consequence management needs to play out. So we've had an oversight visit there with the portfolio committees of Public Works and Infrastructure and Home Affairs. We saw for ourselves just the corruption that took place. It was visible for everybody to see. And now it's just to conclude on this matter. I think that is where we are really. So, colleagues, good morning and welcome. And I've just got two announcements to make, which are in-house matters at the end of the meeting, so that we do not bore the department with our housekeeping matters. Right, Ma'am Delil, good morning. And may I now hand over to you and your team to give us the update. Colleagues, I hope you all are fine. All right, it's a very hot day in Durban. I would like to invite all of you, if you find time, to visit us in the beautiful province. It's a beautiful day for, yeah. All right, Ma'am Delil, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members. I was in your beautiful province yesterday, and I must say the weather is very good, and I will support you that people must go and visit KZN. Chairperson, I agree with you. It is now more than a year later. After your visit, the 4th to the 6th of September 2020, that we have submitted our monthly reports to SCOPA. We are bringing further updates today, Chairperson, some good and some not so good, but especially when it comes to the consequence management, there certainly things are not going as smoothly as we had wished for. But I'm joined by the acting DG, also our legal services, Christopher Makgoba, our internal audit, Ms. Rendani, supply chain management, Henrik Isaacs, and then also Luazi from the government and the risk branch, and then Sassa Sabane is also a DDG. So we've got a full delegation to answer any questions that the committee might pose to us. So immediately over to you, Chair, over to the acting DG through you, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
But no, that is perfectly in order, Minister. Thank you very much. All right. Acting DG, let's hear the good and the bad. It was the best of times, it was the worst of times. Let's hear it.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I presume I should open my camera. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And good morning, Chairperson. Good morning to members of the committee. Chairperson, we are here to present, as the Minister has mentioned, the implementation of the recommendations of SCOPA's oversight visit to the Bay Bridge border post from the 6th to the 4th to the 6th of September. Your report was dated the 17th of November. And we also wish to share with the committee the ongoing processes to effect these recommendations, as well as some of the recommendations of the investigation conducted by the department itself, together with the SIU. So, Chairperson, in terms of the timeline, moving on to the next slide, just to refresh the memory, that the national state of disaster was declared in March 2020, and we then commenced repairing a 40-kilometer section of the border post fence as a result of a risk identified by the Department of Defense with respect to illegal immigration. And as a result of various concerns that emerged within a few weeks, the minister then requested the Auditor General to conduct an investigation on the 8th, 24th of 20th of April 2020. Shortly thereafter, on the 25th of April 2020, the minister then instructed that all payments be stopped in favor of these two companies, and also requested an internal investigation to be conducted by the department, and the department then subsequently procured the services of the SIU together with built environmental specialists from the PICC to conduct the investigation. And as it were, Chairperson, we reported that the investigation identified a lack of planning, procurement irregularities, non-compliance with SCM prescripts, and poor quality materials used for the construction, together with excessive project costs, mainly as a result of a failure to go out to the market to procure the best priced system in place. So the investigation on bait breach then commenced on the 25th of April 2020. Moving to the next slide, Chairperson, also with the timeline, we appeared before the Standing Committee on Public Accounts on the 3rd of June 2020. That was the first time we appeared before the committee. We then appeared again on the 25th of August 2020 on the investigation findings. By then, we had completed our investigation. And then the committee itself conducted the site visit, as I mentioned, from the 4th to the 6th of September 2020 and made their own findings. And on the 4th of September, the DPW, the PICC, and the SIU briefed the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, the Portfolio Committee on Public Works, as well as Home Affairs, on the findings of our investigation. We appeared again on the 6th of October 2020, and the scope report was then also released on the 17th of November 2020. And this, Chairperson, is then the basis of this presentation and the update. We also appeared in 2021 before SCOPA to provide the updates on the implementation of the recommendations arising out of the SCOPA investigation. And this we did in February, April, and May 2020. And again, we submitted reports during the course of the year. And the last report was submitted for the July period at the end of August 2020. So, Chairperson, moving forward from there and talking directly to the implementation of recommendations, I move on to slides 5 and 6. The first issue of importance is the development of the memorandum of understanding, and the recommendation of SCOPA is that we review the memorandum of understanding between the parties to clarify the roles and responsibilities of the Department of Defense together with those of the Department of Home Affairs and Public Works. In this regard, Chairperson, we reported that an updated MOU for the border environment was submitted to Defence in 13 August 2021, and inputs were received on the 5th of November 2021 from the Department of Defence. DOD then also requested that we include other stakeholders in a memorandum of understanding, and that we convert this memorandum of understanding into some sort of implementation protocol. This we are currently doing. One of the other departments we are also including in this arrangement is the Department of Agriculture, who play a significant role in the border environment with a different interest. They seek to keep animals out because of diseases such as foot and mouth, for example. So this is unfolding, and the updated protocol is currently with our legal services to approve the revised document as a result of changes that were effective out of our consultations with DOT. With respect to the port of entry, Chairperson, the Department of Home Affairs, including the Border Management Authority, leads in this particular space as a result of the promulgation of the Border Management Authority Act. So in support of all of these developments, we've had engagements with all of the road players over a period of time. And the last engagement we've had was on the 11th of November 2021, quite recently, this month. And to support the DOD, Chairperson, in developing the borderline solution, we submitted or put out to the market a request for information on the 28th of March 2021. This closed on the 26th, and we received 16 proposals from the market on borderline solutions and overall infrastructure solutions to protect the borderline. We convened bid committees during June 2021, and 3 bids were found to be compliant in terms of the request for information. These compliant bids were then submitted to the Department of Defense during the month of July 2021 to enable the DOD to incorporate their final specifications. The DOD indicated in a meeting with the DPW on the 11th of November 2021 that engagements are transpiring within DoD and confirmations are expected from the DoD before the end of this month. We also want to reiterate, Chairperson, that our minister is scheduled to brief the Minister of Defense, the incoming Minister of Defense, on the RFI initiative, as well as the remaining requirements of the MOU. So there's also an awareness at the executive level insofar as the incoming minister is concerned. Moving over from our relationship with the DoD, Chairperson, and structuring the relationship and supporting DoD with border fence solutions, we move over to the physical defects that are being rectified in line with all the applicable regulations as proposed in the recommendations of SCOPA in the November 2020 report. And Chairperson, we've reported before that the technical condition assessment was finalized, and as the fence in its current form was not fit for purpose, in material non-compliance with the specifications, we took a decision as a department not to undertake any further repairs to the fence, as this will constitute further wasteful expenditure. So that's where we are, Chairperson, insofar as the rectification of the fence is concerned. Moving on to recommendation number three, the legal action against the implicated companies and the processes to recover money, it must be set in motion in terms of the recommendations of the SCOPA report. Chairperson, I just want to go back a little in time to give a bit of history. That the SIU, on behalf of the state, launched an application in September 2020 to freeze the bank accounts of the service providers. And on November 2020, the SIU instituted action against both the companies called Caledon River Properties, or so-called Magua Construction, as well as Prof Team, who are the principal agents and service providers with respect to this particular contract, in the special tribunal, the SIU tribunal. And the main relief sought in the application, Chairperson, members of the committee, is for the tribunal to declare these contracts invalid. The contract concluded between DPW and the respondents invalid. The application was opposed, and the matter was enrolled to argue jurisdiction. And on the 26th of January 2021, in the special tribunal, this matter was heard. And the tribunal then further, on the 25th of February, dismissed the respondents' points in limine about jurisdiction, arguing that the SIU tribunal was not the fit and proper jurisdiction for this matter. This point was dismissed, and the matter proceeded. And in the final analysis, Chairperson, the contractors also then approached the SIU at that particular point in time and requested that the parties consider some sort of out-of-court settlement. Now, Chairperson, moving over in time to the middle of this year, the SIU and the respondents exchanged information in their so-called case management hearings, and the trial was held on the 4th to the 8th of October 2021 in the special tribunal. And in this tribunal, Chairperson, the contracts were declared invalid, and the parties argued on cost in terms of a fair and equitable settlement. The SIU, acting on behalf of the department and the state, is arguing for the recovery of all payments made to these companies in accordance with the recommendation of SCOPA included in its November report. We are now waiting for the final hearing that will be delivered by the judge out of the case argued between the 4th and the 8th. But the development, Chairperson, is that the contracts were declared invalid, and we're now arguing costs and recovery of all the payments made to the respective companies, and judgment is expected at any time. Chairperson, moving on from there, in terms of the criminal investigation, we received the latest update this morning that the SIU has been busy briefing the colonel responsible for this investigation in the SEPs. And apparently, the matter is now with the NPA for a decision. The investigator has referred the file under case number 359-0721 to the NPA for a decision on prosecution. So the criminal matter is at that stage. The criminal investigation was concluded by the SEPs and is now with the NPA for decision going forward. Moving forward from number three, Chairperson, we move on to the department and the blacklisting of the principal agent as well as the contractor from doing business with government in terms of Regulation 14 of the preferential procurement regulations 2017, Chairperson, we reported the companies were restricted after a long process, due process. The department has a restriction committee which has been formally constituted some 2 years back to follow and pursue due process in the restriction of companies to enable the department to gather all the evidence and also to give those companies an opportunity in terms of due process to provide the representations. We went through this process and then make recommendations to National Treasury. Then Treasury has placed these companies under restriction during September 2021 for a period of 10 years. So we understand that these companies have appealed, and our restriction committee will then address this matter further with the National Treasury. So that's where we are, Chairperson. The companies have been restricted. Moving from number four, we move to number five, Chairperson. This was a recommendation that required the department to terminate the contracts of the principal agent as well as the contractor. And we appointed our internal audit unit to investigate all the current contracts of Magua Construction and Profteam on a sample basis. And the outcome of the investigation reflected that there were 19 contracts in place for the Profteam, which is the principal agent, and 11 for Magua Construction. They were at different stages, and all of them at advanced stages of completion. The audit concluded during August 2021, and the outcome is that there were no material findings in either on the procurement process or on implementation as a result of site versus that warrant the termination of the contracts, that it was in the interest of the department to see this through and conclude them, and then follow the restriction process, which we have done. We've also presented this report to the audit committee of the department on the 28th of July, and they are monitoring progress in this regard as well. Moving on to slide number 10, and slide number 10 talks to the vetting of supply chain officials. Slide number 10 is historical in nature, and slide number 11, Chairperson, provides an updated assessment and record of the number of officials under vetting. And in this current year, 253 officials in this particular SEM space are subject to vetting. Of the 253, Chair, the department has completed the vetting for 184. And what I need to state, Chairperson, before proceeding is that in terms of the vetting process, the initial rudimentary checks called the fieldwork stage is conducted by the department through our security unit. They conduct the criminal record checks, they gather the information, and they conduct the initial assessments of a person's security competence. And the file is then referred to the State Security Agency for the high-level assessment, including the polygraph process. And the final decision on security competence is taken at that level at the SSA. So it's very much a partnership in the value chain, and we deal with the first aspects of the value chain. So of the 253, we've completed 184. And out of the 184, the vetting is currently underway on 44 officials at the SSA, and a number of files already sent to the SSA is 140. SSA has completed 14 of those, and they've been referred to them, 14 of the 140, so that's 10% return for us. And the remaining 69 files, they suggest that we must still commence our fieldwork vetting within the department. And our plan to complete the project includes our site visits, starting with Bloemfontein, and it continues into Mthatha, Cape Town, Johannesburg, Durban, Kimberley, during the period January to March 2022, concluding at our head office at March 2022, when these 69 files are expected to be completed. And some of the factors that that implicates or impedes at least the progress on the project is that the field work then advances at a quick pace, but the subsequent processes within SSA then take some time, especially that the polygraph has become a challenge under the COVID because of the proximity of the individuals subject to the polygraph and the assessor. So the polygraph has been delayed and has caused delay in some of the processes. But as a department, our processes are quite robust, and we've completed most of the files for submission to SSA and will conclude the remaining files during March next year. Moving on to slide number 12, Chairperson, that all reasonable steps are taken before money is owed to the state can be written off as irrecoverable. And Chair, this was also dealt with in the earlier slide where we put a moratorium on all payments to the service providers. So then no more payments can take place. And then also this is playing out in the SIU tribunal where the matter was argued between the 4th and the 8th of October. And we're now waiting the outcome of the hearing. And ultimately, we argued for a fair and equitable settlement and the belief that the department should be refunded all payments made. But ultimately, it's for the court to make that decision on whether the companies incurred any legitimate expense and whether the department received any value. So we await the court outcome. Slide number 13 is the consequence management process. Chairperson, I'd like to reflect this area of the presentation in three parts. The first part is the presentation of the two officials, which are outside the scope of the department. The second part is the members of the National Adjudication Committee who awarded the relevant contracts. There are nine officials and there are another two officials, senior officials, who are dealt with separately for reasons I will explain during the course of the presentation. With respect to the two officials, would be the appointments in terms of Section 12 and 12A of the Public Service Act, the Director General, as well as the Minister's Advisor. So, Chairperson, you did mention in your opening remarks that the committee will receive a separate presentation from the Presidency where the matter of the suspended Director General is being administered. Moving on to the Special Advisor, in the final analysis, the Minister is proceeding with the disciplinary charges against the special advisor, and there's a meeting scheduled for the 10th of November to finalize the charge sheet between the minister's representatives and the official concerned. So moving on from that particular one, Chairperson, this is the two that fall outside the scope of the department. I move forward to talk about the remaining officials. It's been a long drawn-out process, and we've obviously been challenged in a number of respects. The State Attorney and the Council were instructed already in February 2021 and served charges on all the officials concerned. And there was a hearing held on the 8th of March where all the parties set the hearing dates for April 2021 as well as May, between the 4th and 6th of May 2021. There were pre-hearing meetings held on the 30th of March where a number of agreements was reached, Chairperson. And these agreements are more or less reflected in some of the bullets here. That first of all, there was an agreement on the exchange of documents between the various parties by the 6th of April, so that proceedings could be undertaken with the benefit of all parties receiving the relevant information. And then the employee parties were to send any requests for further particulars on the 10th, between the 10th and the 13th of April, so that we could respond as an employer before the conclusion of April with any further particulars. Then the hearing for the members of the Adjudication Committee, Chairperson, was scheduled for the 21st to the 24th of March, and that hearing proceeded where the DPWI led witnesses for 3 days on the procurement process. Then the matter was heard for those 3 days and then postponed for further hearing between the 14th and the 18th of June for cross-examination and further testimony. There were three more witnesses were still to testify on behalf of the department, as we were at with the hearings for the members of the National Adjudication Committee. Now, on the 8th of June, the State Attorney communicated that the chairperson had tested positive for COVID, and the availability on the date set of 14 to 18 June was then set aside. So we had that challenge, and further dates were then negotiated. And in the meanwhile, the State Attorney indicated that hearings will be postponed indefinitely as a result of a separate development on the other two officials, which I will deal with separately. The two senior officials we segregate from the nine members of the National Bid Adjudication Committee as a result of the charges being quite different. The two members of the National Bid, or at least the two senior members, one of whom brought a court application to essentially asked the court to rule against the investigation report, as well as the instructions that gave rise to the need to fix the fence, the ministerial instruction, and then to stay the disciplinary proceedings, and I'll deal with that separately. Now, what has transpired, Chairperson, is that we've had this delay as a result of the illness of the Chairperson and also illness of members of the National Bid Adjudication Committee and the availability of counsel dealing with that aspect of the disciplinary hearings, the NBAC 9 members. And in the final analysis, moving on to the next slide, Chairperson, this has all been postponed to February 2022. And the Chairperson then negotiated with the council and the lawyers acting on behalf of the staff members that we need to conclude the hearings. And he set aside 10 days, 10 consecutive days between the 14th and 25th of February next year with an undertaking by all parties that they will make themselves available and no further applications for postponements will be heard by the Chairperson. So we are hoping that what we started out this year and the hearings that we left, we can conclude with the testimony of our further three witnesses and conclude the cases of the 9 members of the National Bid Adjudication Committee during February of next year. Chairperson, moving on to the issue of a High Court application, what transpired is that during May of this year, one of the two senior officials, the legal representative acting on his behalf, it brought a notice to the hearing that he's brought an application to the High Court to do certain things, one of which is to set aside the instructions of the minister to commission the border fence repair project. Second of all, also bringing an application to set aside the investigation report and consequently to set aside the disciplinary hearings. So what is transpiring now, there's an exchange of information between the lawyers acting on behalf of the senior official concerned and the department, and thereafter a date will be set for hearing of this particular matter. So we've had that challenge. And I move to the next slide. Yes, as I have explained, I think I've moved ahead of myself here, that on slide 16, that the hearings of the senior official were scheduled between the 4th and the 6th of May. And I think I basically explained the slide. So what we've done, Chairperson, we've done two things as a result of this application. As I've mentioned, that we are preparing the necessary documentation and preparing for this case and waiting for the date for set down of this case to argue against the application brought by the senior official. But there's also another development. We considered continuing with the case by not relying on the investigation report, by bringing testimony from witnesses and supporting documents. But we quickly appreciated that this wouldn't work, that this would be a parallel disciplinary process. So what we've done is we've now deposed founding papers to review the ruling of the chairperson in the disciplinary hearing to postpone this hearing of the senior officials so that we file this in the labor court. And we overturned the decision of the chairperson to postpone the hearings as a result of the application brought by the senior official. We're now waiting feedback from the state attorney and the papers are being served on the respondent and all the relevant parties. So we've turned to the labor court to overturn the decision of the chairperson to postpone the hearings of the senior officials. Chairperson, that's where we are with that one. Moving on to slide number 17, that the investigation reports are submitted to SCOPA. So we are submitting reports regularly to SCOPA. We've submitted various reports as I've included in the timeline. And of course, we are here today to account further as to developments in this regard. And with respect to the SANDF, the Standing Committee also recommended that we engage the DOD to ensure optimal deployment in terms of their mandate. And as DPW, we've engaged DOD on the need to increase their presence on the borderline, given the fact that defense cannot operate all on its own. It needs proper border patrols to work in unison with the patrols and the infrastructure and the other sorts of monitoring that is used by the DOD. So all of this was done quite early, and then the last being on the 27th of April last year, when the border fence project was completed, the first piece of correspondence was to the Secretary of Defense, as well as to the Minister of Defense, alerting them of the completion and handover of the border fence and the need to conduct regular patrols to also complement the fence to protect the integrity of the fence. Moving on from slide 17, Chairperson, and I'm moving to slide number 19. These are further recommendations made in the investigation report of the department in the SIU, that one of the areas of non-compliance was with respect to the site clearance at the border fence area, that the Department of Environmental Affairs issued permission to construct the border fence, and we found that this particular border fence was in material non-compliance with the authority of the Department of Environmental Affairs. So we were compelled to report this non-compliance in a letter to the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries, and we did so in terms of the National Environmental Management Act on the 30th of November last year. And we also want to mention that we've obtained the environmental authorization in November and December last year for all the relevant sections of the border post. The difficulty is that this border fence was in non-compliance and not in the same area as the approval granted by the Department of Environmental Affairs. So we've reported this non-compliance, and now we're waiting for the DEA to complete their hearing in this regard on how they believe we should correct and cure this non-compliance. But that is within the space of the Environmental Affairs Department. Moving on to the next section, the Chairperson, slide number 20, is a recommendation to the professional councils. We've taken other initiatives such as restricting the companies from doing business. We've brought applications before the tribunal to recover losses. We've also made references for criminal investigation and disciplinary hearings play out within the department. But we have also taken the step of reporting these companies to the professional bodies. And we started off with the CBE, which is the Council for the Built Environment. And we engaged the CBE with respect to the principal agent failing to act in the interest of the department and breaching their fiduciary duties towards DPWI, and also initiating and certifying progress payments where no progress was achieved on the project, and yet progress payments were certified by the professionals, and also overseeing the development of an overstated bill of quantities that placed the department at risk of financial abuse and exploitation. And then we recommended to the CBE, as well as the Engineering Council, that further investigations must take place. And on the 16th of August last year, we engaged CBE, and CBE is apparently an appellant authority. So we focused our energies on the Engineering Council, where this investigation then properly belonged. Now, what has transpired is that we also made a report to the CIDB last year during October as a department, and CIDB took an approach where they believe that the department should not be tabling a complaint on Magua Construction and Prof Team, that it should really be the SIU, because the department is also a participant in the particular matter under consideration. And the SIU would be an independent party and would rightly and correctly make the complaint to the CIDB, which delayed the process, allowed the SIU to make the complaint to the CIDB for further investigation, which is ongoing. With respect to EXA, we've been informed that EXA has completed its investigation, and the investigation was tabled before their investigation committee at the end of October 2021. And the investigation committee has engaged in special engagements to conclude the investigation, and we're expecting an outcome from EXA at any moment. We engaged them, Chairperson and members of the committee, last week and Thursday to ask, and they advised that they will conclude this matter before the end of the year, that it's in its final quality review stages. So we're expecting an outcome from EXA immediately. CIDB, it is not entirely clear, Chairperson, when they will conclude their investigation. CIDB apparently conduct the investigation in terms of their code of conduct. And even though they are our public entity, they have their procedures, which we've had to respect. Moving on to slide number 21. And the final slide, Chairperson, is the appreciation that the Bay Bridge project, and the weaknesses identified require a response as well. And there's certain training and awareness and quality control interventions the department had undertaken. And first of all, the department concluded an MOU with the National School of Government at the end of last year to facilitate training courses for personal development within governance and administration, and in particular in SCM, and that take place on a regular basis with the staff attending on an ongoing basis. Our professional services branch in public works has also developed a training strategy to professionalize not only SCM officials, but all officials in the infrastructure delivery value chain. And we've also had engagements with Treasury to professionalize SCM. And one example is the establishment of a contract management unit, who our head of SCM can talk about in further detail, that the need to have proper contract management is seen as a material weakness in the department. And not only the management of the requirements of a contract, which is very important, but also technical evaluation and appraisal of a contract during the course of delivery is equally important. So that's taking place at a greater intensity. And we also have bid committee training sessions, which is our bid specification, evaluation, and adjudication committee. And that's being rolled out, as well as all sorts of training around supply chain and irregular expenditure. So the training and awareness is a big intervention, Chairperson. And we have an internal audit unit, which is very robust, working very closely with our audit committee, where they reevaluate the controls in the areas that fell within the purview of construction delivery management. And in this particular instance, the SCOPA recommendation that we investigate all the current contracts for Magua and Prof Team provided a good opportunity to look at the control environment as well, which our internal audit unit has done. And an audit action plan then emerged out of the findings and recommendations of the internal audit unit in the course of investigating the Magua and Prof Team contracts. And those recommendations are contained in the audit action plan and reviewed by the audit committee as well as by the minister on a quarterly basis. So there we are, Chairperson. We also have registers where we deviations are recorded. And stringent oversight is maintained over deviations that we go beyond the conventional processes. So deviations are not allowed in the department by and large. And if there are deviations, they must involve the National Treasury and they must be subject to proper recording. So Chairperson, that is the conclusion to the presentation and the implementation of the recommendations of SCOPA, as well as some of those which pertain to the internal investigation conducted by the department with the assistance of the SIU. And we recommend that the Standing Committee on Public Accounts notes our progress in implementing the recommendations arising from your report dated 17 November, pursuant to your site visit to the border post between the 6th and the 4th of September 2020, as well as the ongoing process to maintain the credibility and implementation of these recommendations. So, Chairperson, thank you very much.
All right. Minister, are you good on your side?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Chairperson. We will now take questions through you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Acting DG, for that very comprehensive report back on the recommendations of the committee. And thank you, Minister. All right. colleagues, the SIU is here as well with us. So if they need to field any questions from you, they are readily available to do so. But Honorable Van Meenen, you are first off the bat.
Thank you very much, Chair. And good morning to everybody here. I have two central areas that I want to question. The first one is a combination of recommendation one, and I think it was recommendation eight, about the MOU with the Department of Defense. Now, I think we can agree a year ago already that this MOU was urgent. It's something that needs to be in place. As we know, the fence is extremely defective, and as it has been decided that no repairs will be effected, I think we can probably accept that the fence is now completely defunct and probably not containing anything at all. Now, what really concerns me after our visit there and the previous interaction we had with the Department of Defense is that the then Minister of Defense admitted to this committee that the SADNDF was facilitating a certain amount of cross-border movement, that she had no issue with this. In fact, to the point where soldiers were at times not only facilitating this, but actually picking people up who had come across the border to go and do various commercial activities and then taking them back. Given the need for this MOU and also given the recommendation that the Department of Defense ramp up their activities to secure that border, and considering that we are still in a situation of COVID, which is what necessitated defense in the first place, I just want to find out what material steps have really been taken to expedite getting the MOU signed, because it really does seem to be taking quite a while, as well as what has been agreed in terms of what the SANDF's role will be in actually securing the border at this particular point. So that is one that is really important. We now have a new minister in the Department of Defense, and we really have to know that things are happening there. We're not going to be sitting with the same facilitation of illegal activities that we had last time. My other question really is to do with recommendation 3 and the details about the court case. It's not very clear from the information that was provided, and this might be from the person who originally authored the slides, as to what is happening there. So on one hand, there is an attempt to declare the contract invalid, and that summons will then be delayed until that in fact happens. Then we hear there was actually a trial. The finding has not yet been released, but we're also hearing that the contract was declared invalid. That doesn't really make logical sense. So I just want to get a more comprehensive report on exactly what the situation is there and what the course of events is, because I suspect there might be a bit of confusion there in terms of the processes. So I just want to be sure that we are getting a very clear answer on that particular recommendation. And then also in terms of the British Education Committee and the very long proceedings that have been delayed there, can I also request from SCOPA that after the end of February, we please also get a report back on that, because it is also something that really does seem to be delayed, you know, sine die, and there seems to be every excuse under the sun as to why it's not moving forward. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Honourable Van Minnen. Let's get responses to those very comprehensive questions, and I note the last part. I think the one area now which needs a comprehensive follow-up on us is on the consequence management. I think in the other areas there is movement. Okay, let's get responses to those questions, and then Honourable Mente, you are next. Honourable Mitsiwisa, noted. So Honourable Mente, you will come in after the response. I just don't want the questions to get lost. Minister, over to you.
And thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Chairperson, just in terms of the MOU and the finalisation of the MOU, we've been attempting to set up a meeting with the new Minister of Defence. It's not been easy. It's not for a lack of trying. We have been trying. I have also phoned the Minister directly and told her that we have to go and report to SCOPA about progress, and unfortunately I'm still waiting on a response from the Minister. But the department and the technical people in the Department of Defense, they have come up with proposals, and it's now just up to myself and the Minister of Defense to rectify those technical proposals from the two teams. But I will keep on trying, Honourable Chairperson. The acting DG can deal with the technical part on the status of the contracts. Thank you, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Minister. All right, the acting DG.
Yes, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, with respect to the contracts, and the SIU is also in the room, the contracts have been declared invalid. What is being argued before the court is the fair and equitable settlement, and that is the outcome that we're currently waiting for. What should we pay under these contracts? We want to ensure that we recover every cent we've paid, and the other side are arguing that they are entitled to a fair profit. Our argument is that the profit cannot be validated on the basis of an invalid contract. So those are the arguments playing out in court, but the contracts themselves have been declared invalid. So it's a fair and equitable settlement that must still be adjudicated by the presiding officer. And Chairperson, I've noted the comment with respect to the NBAC that it is our endeavor to conclude the hearings in February over the 10-day period for the members of the National Bird Adjudication Committee. And with respect to the DOD role, the Honourable Member Van Meenen asked the question about the respective roles, that our role is limited purely to the provision of infrastructure. That is why we approach the market for the best practice border fence solutions that include physical infrastructure together with sensors to monitor the movement of people. The DOD that is the exclusive responsibility for maintaining border security, Department of Public provides infrastructure in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Right. Honorable Van Meenen, are you good?
I'm fine for now. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thanks. Honorable Mente?
Thank you, Chair. I'm not in a very good network place. My photo will not appear.
What?
Yes, Chair, part of my questions are answered, covered by Honorable Van Meenen. However, I have two more clarities that I'm seeking from Department of Public Works. One, I'm not comfortable with the type of argument that the department is pursuing at court. I'm not sure what kind of an instruction they gave to the lawyers, because the lawyers also, as much as they go and argue, they act on the instruction of the client. And the client on this case already have won the first argument that the contracts are invalid. And the contracts are invalid on the basis that both the service provider and officials engaged in a criminal activity, fraudulent and criminal activity. So on that basis, then the contracts were null and void. Now, I'm not sure, I think that the DG, acting DG, must take us through what kind of an instruction do they give them that will not even give them certainty in terms of the settlement argument? Now, why do we have to settle to people who are criminals? Because that should be clear. So there is no fair and equitable something. There's nothing fair and equitable that must be paid to criminals. When they were engaging in a criminal activity, they knew very well that they are stealing. And therefore, when you are caught stealing, and what that which you were stealing is now confiscated, it's taken. Why must you be entitled to some fair and equitable something? So I need clarity on that area. Perhaps the SIU will also clear some of these ambiguities, because for me, we deal with a whole lot of cases, but this kind of an instruction for me is not sitting well. And number two, I need to know from the DG the frequency in which the audit committee is working on. Why am I asking that question? The audit committee now has a finding that there are no irregularities or something untoward in terms of the existing contracts of the two service providers. And I'm asking myself that at some point before we went to the oversight, in fact, before their second appearance to SCOPA, in their report, there was an indication that the department have visited the site, did not find material and all those things. So already there were red flags. So where were those red flags reported to? Did the audit committee get to collect some of that information in order to make comparison to the expenditure? So was it involved in any level of auditing of this particular transaction, or was it not involved altogether? Because for me, it's placing a high level of doubt that they will not find any irregularity on the existing contracts of people who can engage in such an unscrupulous behavior. And yet all the contracts are now all of a sudden very clean, all of them very clean. I'm not convinced. We will have to be convinced otherwise. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Man. Let's get responses to that, and then Honorable Sirisa, stand by.
I am done, Chairperson.
Yeah, I was saying, can we get a response to that? And Honorable Sirisa, stand by after the responses.
Acting DG?
Yes, thank you very much, Minister. I just lost the connection for a few seconds, but I did get the sense of the questions. Look, Chairperson, through you, I will comment, but I'll also ask the SIU to come in, as well as the internal audit unit. We do have the officials present. With respect to the argument in court, Chairperson, through you, that I would suggest that the declaration of invalidity by the court is actually in our favor. It gives us a platform to achieve a recovery, or to argue that no payments could be made under the terms of the contract. In fact, it was argued that the contracts were invalid on the grounds that a proper procurement process was not followed. And I do agree with the Honorable Member that those who profit from undue activities should not be allowed to retain any of their ill-gotten gains. And that is what we've argued before the tribunal, or at least the SIU has argued on our behalf before the tribunal, that we should pay nothing at all under these conditions, given that these contracts are invalid and ill-gotten gains were achieved out of an ill-gotten contract. So I'd like the SIU to also comment there, as well as the internal audit, on the findings of the existing contracts, so that they can give a proper exposition of their findings. May I ask Mr. Makhoba, who is our legal services, to speak in further detail with respect to what is before the SIU tribunal. And the SIU, Mr. LaRue is present, can also join him. And Ms. Randani Mashikwane can come in from the internal audit side to speak to the findings of the unit with respect to the investigation of the current contracts of these two companies. Mr. Makhoba, can we start with you? Yes, Minister, you're mute, if you could mute, please. So thank you very much, Mr. Makhoba. Can you please come in to talk about the arguments before the no?
Thank you very much, Acting DG. Good morning, Minister. Good morning, Chairperson. And to answer the question of Honorable Member Minister, indeed you are.
Could turn your camera on, please.
All right. Thank you. Now, to deal with the question of the just and equitable remedy. Indeed, Honorable Member, it is a bit puzzling. Now, maybe let's take it from the current constitutional framework. Now, when the courts are approached to for an application for declaratory order, their approach, we raise the issues of invalid, how the procurement process went into. The court, based on the jurisprudence we have, they are bound to declare a contract invalid if the facts presented are clear that indeed procurement irregular procurement process was followed. So in this case, there was no issue. The application we brought in court was to deal with the declaratory order that the contracts were invalid. And secondly, that we wanted to recover the amount of overpayment. Now, in this case, it was not in dispute from both parties, meaning MAGWA and Prof. Team, that the procurement followed by the department is irregular. However, the issue was to say that wasn't MAGWA entitled to some sort of payment? And from the side of SIU and the department was that we were of the view that the fence erected is valueless, and therefore that's why we required full repayment. However, in the jurisprudence we have is that once the court makes a declaratory order, it is not automatic that the other party would not be entitled to any payment or some form of relief. The court in that case retains a discretion to order what is just and equitable. In most cases, the jurisprudence we have, even if the contract may be illegal, the court may still grant a relief that says you honor the payments. That is in line with the principles at common law that the state should not be unduly enriched. As long as you are able to prove that there is some value delivered, then the court has a discretion. That's why there has to be arguments around the value and what could be just and equitable relief that could be given. So there has to be arguments. In some of the contracts that served before the constitutional court, even if after the court has found that the contract was illegally or irregularly awarded, they still retain the discretion on the remedy. They can even order that the respondents or the defendants be compensated. So the court retains a discretion on the issue of just an equitable order. And from the papers, MAGWA and Prof. Team have always submitted that, yes, we have not been involved in your procurement process. We don't know. We were approached and we have erected the fence. In our view, there's some value to the fence, and the value they've attached in their arguments was that the fence is worth over 30 million. And our arguments was that the fence is not fit for purpose, therefore we cannot pay that. So we order that, we ask the court to order that they be not entitled to full payment of the amount claimed. So, in honorable member, is that the jurisprudence we have is that the court has a discretion on the issue of just and equitable relief. It can go either way. That's why there were arguments. Thank you, DJ.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. If I can ask if the SIU official wants to add, if he wants to add to the court matter. Chairperson, if not, I'd like to ask my own.
Let's get Mr. LaRue to come in.
Mr. LaRue is there. Because Chairperson, I think the SIU also wants to contribute to the question.
I'm not fundamentally convinced by. I'm not fundamentally convinced by what Mahoba was saying. I'm still trying to process what he's saying. All right, Babu LaRue, can I hand over to you and ask Mahoba to mute his mic? All right, Leroux, over to you. Honorable Swissa, stand by.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Minister, DG, and all the rest of the members of SCOPA. So, to an extent, we agree with Mr. Pankoba. He has obviously been very involved in looking and monitoring the litigation in the tribunal. So, in general, there is a situation where there has to be a discretion by the court in terms of the just and equitable remedy that is being sought. And the SIU presented its facts around our findings and obviously the facts around the issue of the possible criminality in terms of the invoice that was submitted. So the SIU is at this point have to sit and wait for the tribunal to make its final decision. We have received information early this week that that is currently still happening. And we can only wait for the outcome because it is totally in the discretion of the tribunal, in this case, the judge that sat in front of this matter and heard the entire argument from all parties. So we will have to wait for the outcome of that specific judgment. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Manda, are you fine?
Chairperson, with your permission, ask our internal audit unit to respond to the second question from Honorable Nende regarding the investigation of the remaining contracts of the two companies. Ms. Mashihwane, are you with us? Ms. Mashihwane, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you, Danny.
And
you may.
Good morning to Honorable Mbak. I hope you are able to hear me. I logged in into because I have some network challenges. With regards to the query that the member has indicated now, I think I will need to indicate that our detailed review were mainly on all the projects that MAWA and pro teams were engaging on, and also following up on what has happened since the bait reach project has been completed. So in terms of our scope and our processes, we have looked at the procurement processes that has been undertaken on the current projects that were they are currently running within the department, and those are the areas that we didn't find any material irregularities that has happened there. Whatever we had found out were housekeeping matters that the colleagues within SCM needed to also correct with the colleagues who are currently project managing the those particular project sites. And we also looked at instances of where they are looking into cost, time, and quality. That included fiscal verification. And also what we have noted when we are doing fiscal verification as well is that most of what the work that they have done, they are doing it according to the contract that they have signed with the department. There were areas that the project managers just needed to conclude and finalize. Most of the issues that we have noted, Chairperson and members, are mainly with regards to how the department is project managing the construction project across the whole department, with regards to their standard operating procedures and how the contracts are being laid out in terms of contractors and consultants, where there are some processes that are different, where management needed to look into those matters. Other matters that we also indicated management to look at is with regards to termination clauses and defaulting contractors, and also how they need to address issues of penalties, as well as where there will be instances of variations, how they will need to deal with that, and as well as how they will also need to make sure that consequence management, if it happens at a particular time, it needs to be done at a timely manner and not wait for some of the contracts to lapse and then we are having other people on board. So with regards to all the areas that we have for fiscal verification, Chairperson and members, we didn't find anything material for the that would warrant non-compliance with the projects that the department has had with
MAGWA and PRO team, and that was our conclusion. What we are currently doing is following up on all other areas that we have indicated that management needs to deal with regards to the shortcomings that are indicated in our report. Thank you, Chair and members.
Right. Acting DG, are you done delegating for the responses so that we can proceed?
Chair, we dealt with the two main issues of the court proceedings and the internal audit. So we're done with the Honourable Mente's questions. Thank you, sir.
Honourable Mente, are you fine?
Chair, I think there is something we need to lift out of, especially out of the court process, as far as the declaratory order is concerned, as well as the argument that is made pertaining to this free and equitable share of thieves. I don't know how we will deal with it, Chair, but we will find a way. We need to go through the declaratory order and this argument they are making, because for me, I'm really not comfortable. In my line of duty, we deal with a lot of instructions, but I can assure you I have nothing to do with law. But this one, they can't be a room for someone who made it their business that this time was stealing. You buy a wrong fence knowingly, and then you say, it's not my problem that the fence I bought is wrong. It's you who's procuring. Yet you know that your procurement, the procurement standards, in fact, the service that you're supposed to bring is not the service you're bringing. You know it for a fact. So for me, there is two things that don't, they don't make sense for me. We stop the contracts because the contracts are completely wrong. Yet at the very same time, we must compensate someone who came with the intention of stealing. I don't know whether there's a defect in law or what's happening, but I'll be happy, Chair, if we go through the declaratory order and the instruction. We'll take it from there. Perhaps in their next visit, we'll write a letter for some more clarification. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, no, that's what I was saying earlier on. I was trying to wrap my head around what was being said. But you see, the issue here is that that declaratory order, I would imagine, is made in the unfortunate vacuum that the consequence management has not been concluded. Because in the event that the disciplinary processes were done, the findings of the disciplinary processes can and should form part and parcel of the submissions to the tribunal in order to further expose the extent of the corruption that went in. So in the absence of the conclusion of those consequence management processes, we are putting the tribunal in a very difficult position in that they either rule or they suspend making a determination until it's done. Because the fact that Mahua's argument is that we were approached is in itself, as far as I see it, one of the biggest admissions of what fundamentally went wrong. But the question now becomes who approached them and whether the department concludes the disciplinary processes. So that part is very key in actually dealing with this. So I hear you, Honorable Mente, on that one. But Honorable Sewisa, let's take your questions and then Babu Somya will come in afterwards. Honorable Sewisa.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the opportunity. Greetings to everyone. Chair, I'm with the same sentiments that Honorable Mente is coming up with, and also you, because I'm worried 1 year, 2 months into the investigation of the SIU, we are still getting reports that the disciplinary processes are not completed yet. And I'm worried because in the medium-term budget of the Minister of Finance, there's a possibility of an upgrade to the Bay Bridge. And we are sitting with officials whose disciplinary has not been finalized, which is also, as you've also alluded, that it's going to have a negative impact on the tribunal decision as to which way they need to go. That's one of my concerns. The other one is, I need to understand what's the relevance of the CBE and EXA and SIDB making their own investigation, and how is their outcome going to affect the outcome of the SIU, and how is it going to affect the actions that are going to be taken by the NPA at this moment? Because if the department says that we've taken a decision that the contractor is not going to get any contracts anymore, then why go to the length of approaching the CIDB and the CBE, whereas we've got then an investigating unit that does all the investigation for all government departments, and yet we want to approach entities to come and also do their investigation pertaining certain contractors. That's all from my sector. Thank you.
Let's get responses to that.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And Honorable Siwisa. Chairperson, through you, the first concern that Honorable Siwisa shared with yourself and Honorable Mente, I would like to place on the record that some of the issues raised by yourselves, that is the arguments that the SIU and the department have put forth before the tribunal, that we cannot profit, we cannot compensate a company on an invalid contract. So I would very much, concur with those sentiments. And those are the arguments that we've used essentially to ensure that the state does not lose a cent as a result of these irregular contracts. So very much from our side, we are in concurrence with that way and line of thinking. So Chairperson, on the second issue is the referrals to the Engineering Council and these professional bodies and how this affects the investigation of the SIU and the department and the disciplinary processes, etc. Chairperson, I'd like to suggest that these are complementary referrals. What they do is they hold these professionals to account from their professional bodies. For example, you'd find that the directors, in particular of the companies, will more often than not be a member of one of the professional councils. In this instance, there will be membership of the Engineering Council. And the Engineering Council, as well as the CIDB, will charge the directors for professional misconduct. So they will receive an additional sanction from their professional bodies. And there may be other sanctions where they are forced and they cannot practice any longer in the profession for a certain period because of the irregularities we have reported that have been perpetrated by these companies. So this is professional misconduct that they are under investigation for, and they may be subject to additional sanctions as a result. So it's a complementary initiative that will not in any way collide with anything else that we are undertaking as part of the investigation. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay, thank you very much. Magusabi, over to you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and the Honorable Members, the Minister. I think in the first instance, let's say, somewhat appreciate the steps taken in terms of our own initiative as the committee to ensure that the ministry act on the recommendations that we set after this probing in as far as the Bright Beach offense is concerned. Our borders remain perilous in a sense that they need very urgent attention. And that attention is as well going to be dependent on how, some of the parliamentary committees concerned, act in terms of ensuring that whatever that is being done at the level of relevant ministries should remain of a high quality. And that qualitative approach is then a necessity for fulfillment of such. So I want in the first instance to appreciate that the ministry has acted on the recommendations that we posed into the department. And secondly, is a frustration where it comes to a point of a delay in as far as matters that relate to what the chair has referred to ensure those who are found on the wrong to account for their own wrongs. And that accountability should be of a paramount instance, where the success of departments is to ensure the highest level of performance and the ethical conduct as it relates to its own employees and as well those who provide services to such departments for them to be effective in their own function. Therefore, one is very much worried on the snail's pace of such disciplinary processes for accountability. The third area, Minister, is the area that relates to what I think is an area of wisdom, which the department has acted upon. Because if you're talking about the engineering space, it's of a professional nature. And we need to hold those who do that work on the highest in terms of their own ethical conduct. And therefore, reporting them to such professional bodies is a huge benefit to the state, because an exemplary situation should be somewhat be an act of a measure which is so high by the department which is responsible for infrastructure. And therefore, we really need to provide whatever information such bodies would require going forward. The last thing is what Honorable Mende has referred to. I think the department agrees on the fact that those who have done wrong should not find pleasure in terms of their own wrongdoing and ill performance. And therefore, you can't find them back into the payroll of the state on matters which are not necessarily of a benefit for what they have been appointed for. And therefore, the arguments are sound enough to not to be seen as beholden into a particular form of action by those who have been involved in such a in such measures. And lastly, I want to say in appreciation that I think we need as a committee to appreciate the fact that as we have posed these challenges to the ministry started to act on such imposition, and this kind of a report does contain a measure of comfort in terms of acting upon those matters which are sound to our report for finality. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Baba Somyo. Right, can we get responses to that? And colleagues, please indicate if there's enough. Baba Somyo was the last one on my list. If there's any further comments, you'll let me know. Responses, please.
Thank you very much, Minister.
Can I just the first response? I can hear what's coming through the questions, Honorable Chairperson, is, you know, what do we do in the interim with a border controlled area with absolutely no fence? And the urgency of that process. After the request for information and ideas closed, three successful bidders were identified. And it is now up to the Department of Defense to select the best option that Public Works presented to the Department of Defense in line with the specifications required. If we do get that before the end of November, the idea is that because we are talking about a border fence of over 3,000 kilometers, that we also need to then, the intention is to then register the border fence as a strategic infrastructure project in terms of the Infrastructure Development Act of 2014. That will then, once the Presidential Infrastructure Council accepted it as a strategic project, the project will then be entitled to shortened procurement procedures in terms of the Schedule 2 in the Infrastructure Development Act. So that's really where we are moving to, and the anxiety that the Department of Defense must now decide on what it is and the proper specifications. Because part of the request for information and for solutions when we tested the market was also to see how can we use technology, how can we use IT in terms of border control. So that process we need to conclude as soon as possible so that we can go to the market. Obviously, that there are financial constraints within the fiscus. But if we gazette this border fence project as a strategic infrastructure project, my department through Infrastructure South Africa can actually go out to the market also to go and look for funding for this project. So I think next year when we come back to SCOPA, we will be able to provide more progress on the urgency of securing South African borders as soon as possible. I give over to the Acting DG Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Minister. Chairperson, just to add to the Minister's comments on the border infrastructure, with respect to that 3,000 kilometers of our land border, the department has now conducted site clearance processes on at least half of it, which means we've done the pre-feasibility on half of the land border. So we've put ourselves in a position to provide infrastructure solutions. The site clearance project is a pre-clearance project, looking at the land topology and the feasibility of constructing physical infrastructure on the borderline. And we've now concluded perhaps the third year of that project. So we're quite advanced in terms of the site clearance process, and we're in a position to provide the infrastructure to the DOD and all of the high-risk areas of our land border between South Africa, Mozambique, South Africa, Zimbabwe, Eswatini, as well as parts of Botswana. So we've placed ourselves in a good position to give ventilation to what the minister has shared with the committee. With respect to the delays in the consequence management, Chairperson, I want to assure the committee that we are desperate to hold the officials to account. We believe that we will conclude the bid committee disciplinary hearings within the financial year during a period set out in February next year. With respect to the two senior officials, we will fight tooth and nail in the court to reinstate the disciplinary hearings and to stay any decision to delay those hearings. We don't believe that the chairperson of the disciplinary committee acted correctly. There was no court order that gave him the basis upon which to delay the hearings. And we will now take this to the Labour Court to overturn that decision so we can hold the officials to account. And we're determined to do so, Chairperson. With respect to the professional bodies, I think we appreciate the comments made in that regard. It's something new that we are introducing in all of our disciplinary actions, that we ensure that the companies are now restricted and they are referred to professional bodies, so we hold them to account with respect to their professional duties to the department and to their professions. So we've introduced these dimensions in our consequence management processes, and then we appreciate the remaining comments on the progress we've made. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
All right. I think there is, let me put it this way, we are quite satisfied at the fact that there's progress on quite a number of the issues of the recommendations that we have raised. I think that credit must be given. I think it's important that we note that progress in certain areas is being made. And of course, appreciate the fact that these issues are cross-cutting. They are interdepartmental, and they require cooperation and strategic cooperation, really, with all the relevant departments. There's the issue of the Border Management Authority, which is adding a spanner into the works as a new norm. And DOD, of course, has got a constitutional mandate on certain issues in this regard. The SANDF, which cannot be circumvented by additions of law and so on. There's a whole lot of issues. It's a fruit salad of sorts. But the issue, as I've always said with these fruit salad, is that if the pear is rotten, it spoils the entire salad. So we need to get a kind of cooperation which speaks to freshness of cooperation by everybody, as not to spoil everything. So that cooperation is very, very, very important. And I think that this is something which we will have to pursue in the new year, colleagues. But I think all in all, sufficient progress in other areas has not been made. Where there's no progress, of course, is on consequence management. And that is totally unacceptable. Because the ramifications of an absence of consequence management, which is speedy, effective, is that it hampers other things. You see, that's the problem. Because DG, we still have to deal with the issue of the funerals, the funeral corruption, and we are now. At every point when we're meeting with you, we are a broken record on the fence. And there are still other issues. We met with the department in 2019, we were doing the annual report. There was findings from, you know, financial management with the department you must deal with. Cleaning staff, processing invoices, you'll recall that. So we have to make headway on this. And the fact that we're not, I kid you not, is increasingly frustrating. And it is creating a perception which you do not want, that you are stalling deliberately on consequence management. So, Acting DG, this falls squarely on your shoulders. Make sure that this consequence management is done. Do everything legally possible and necessary for you to bring about this bait bridge embarrassment to a consequence management conclusion. We can't be coming back here in February and you have not concluded on this matter. And Acting DG, in the event that you come back here in February and you have not completed on this matter, you will have to tell us why you have to continue in your job. The issues here are very simple. It is common cause that corruption took place at Baitbridge. We know exactly who was involved in it. We know the amounts involved, and we know the companies involved. There have been some declaratory orders from the Special Tribunal which help your case. Conclude the matter. Conclude it. It is a non-negotiable. Like I'm saying, if we come back here in February and it is still more excuses than reasons, you will have to tell us why you have to remain in your job. The matter of the special advisor must be concluded.
the same applies. And we will deal with the issue of the DG with the presidency next week. Our appetite for patience and tolerance on the most basic of things in public administration have flown right out the window. The issues here, like I'm saying, they are clear-cut. We can't be speaking to the Department of Public Works on the issue of Bait Bridge for over a year. I mean, there's a suggestion that we go back to Bait Bridge. I'm not sure why. We saw what happened. The fence is a national embarrassment, right? We know that. What we need now is a clear, concrete plan of border security. That's what we need. So let us really move away from an excuse-based kind of accountability and be reason-based, factual-based to say these are the genuine stumbling blocks. Here, the matter is very simple, clear-cut. We still have to deal with your annual report as the department. There's those things. That prestige portfolio even needs a rename because it just has a particular kind of connotation which is unnecessary, and the costs associated with it are astronomical. Those are not that the Bait Bridge matter is not important, but we run the risk really of foregoing dealing with far more substantive matters than a clear-cut case now which needs just implementation of the basics. So this stalling and this delay, acting DG, is fast increasingly becoming your headache. Sort it out. Pull your team together, pull your legal people together, pull your HR people together, get SIU, everybody, and go the whole 9 yards. If it means you forego that December break, well, so be it. But like I'm saying, do not come here in February with these matters not concluded. The only report that you must then bring in February, if it's not done, is to tell us why you must remain in your job, and then another person must be found to deal with these matters. Otherwise, if we do not assert the strength of parliamentary oversight, as we should, these things become a runaway train. So I hope that, on behalf of my colleagues, what the issues they are raising are substantive to why we are not done. It's clear now why we are not done. There has to be an active demonstration on the part of the department that you yourselves do not associate with what happened at Bait Bridge. Distance yourself through the consequence management that is necessary to set an example in your department that should corruption take place, it will be punished. If you don't, and you allow the disciplinary processes to be open-ended, you open the door for people to say, well, even if I do wrong, there will be no consequences. It is a precedent you do not want to set in the light of the fact that the focal point of the public and everybody about what went wrong is on Bait Bridge. So I hope I am fundamentally clear on this issue. It needs to be concluded. It is a non-negotiable. So I would like to thank you and colleagues for your participation and input this morning. I'm going to hand over to the minister if she has any concluding remarks. And then we will, I just want to make the two announcements which involve housekeeping, and then we will call it a day. And we've got a very long sitting this afternoon as well, from 2 to 6:30. So I think it works for us as well as probably the most hardworking committee in this parliament to have an early day today. Right, Minister, let me hand over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I certainly share your frustration, Chairperson, about the delay in the disciplinary matters. It has just become very, very clear, Chairperson, that some of the senior managers in this department has perfected the art to avoid disciplinary hearings. The players with the law, they interdict the report, then everything has to stop. When the hearings are scheduled, they are sick or the chairperson is sick. We now have got the 10 days that is being set aside in February of 2022. And I hope that in that meeting, the chairperson will proceed with or without the senior managers implicated in this. They've now been playing this for almost 2 years. And every time there's something, a new spinner in the works that they are trying to use to avoid accountability. A chairperson, certainly we will go back, and I appreciate the support from SCOPA, that we should not just be talking about bakeries. There are several other issues in the annual report. And you will even see in the annual report, our report on disciplinary hearings. The same thing, it's all over in the public service where you can hardly discipline or fire anybody. DPSA, Department of Public Service and Administration, the minister has now established a special unit to assist departments with disciplinary hearings. I've requested the acting DG to write to the Minister of Public Service and Administration for her to send that unit to come and help us to get this disciplinary hearings done. Because for the past year and a half, we have been trying, but people have just been playing the system. Lastly, Chairperson, in terms of the interdepartmental cooperation, you are so correct. It's always not easy to get that cooperation amongst departments. We are really at the stage whereby we want to go out and start the procurement of a proper border fence for our 3,000 kilometers of fencing. And we did get a commitment from the Department of Defense that they will finalize the specifications before the end of the year. But once again, Chairperson and honorable members, thank you for the opportunity. And I want to wish all of you a safe and happy festive season, and I hope to see all of us getting back next year. Thank you so much, and God bless.
Thank you very much, Minister. On behalf of my colleagues, let us extend similar wishes to you and your family, the department, the ministry, and the entities of the department, and wish you a blessed festive season, with the hope that if a break is required from the festivities to do the work, it will be done, and may we all be safe on our roads. And after a very long year, which included elections, I think all of us will want to take a moment to go and just breathe. And the headaches that have come with the elections, of course, afterwards. So, Minister, thank you very much. We will meet with the department February, late February, and early March, in what will have to be a conclusion of the disciplinary processes. And if we need to hold that chairperson before us, then we will do so, so that this matter can be done and they can come and explain themselves here as well. If we need to call them prior to tell him or her directly as to what is expected, then we will do so. But this open-ended headache of bait bridges just even the grandpa is not helping with it. We have to find something stronger. So, Mr. Acting DG, and to all the officials, SIU, National Treasury, AG, thank you very much. Colleagues, just two things. Tomorrow morning, we are scheduled to get a briefing by the whistleblower on the matters of DBSA. As you know, we've got that issue. I was advised late afternoon yesterday that the whistleblower is now not available and has requested for a date post the 4th of December, and they'll be available then. So the basis of tomorrow's meeting was that as part of our fact-finding mission. And then there is a letter that will be circulated to members as well regarding the bait bridge DBSA matter and the response in which I gave them yesterday for the purposes of your information and record keeping. So, Sistombi, please circulate the DBSA letter and my response to DBSA on that matter. So tomorrow morning, colleagues, unfortunately, at this late moment, there is nobody that can be called to fill that time slot because the whistleblower has indicated late yesterday afternoon their non-availability. We will relook at the program for next year and accommodate them accordingly. We just don't have space to maneuver in the last 10 days that we have. So that's the first issue. The second point is that tomorrow evening we are scheduled to meet with the Minister of Higher Education and Training on the investigations matters we had directed. I'm getting information from the Minister's office that they are not in a position to report because their report will only reach them in January. So we are still working out the modalities again now of tomorrow evening's meeting. Originally, the meeting was scheduled for tomorrow morning, but there was a request for a swap because the minister will be in cabinet, and now there's new information that, well, maybe they may not be available. So I'll request colleagues that you be on standby for the purposes of that meeting. I will come out of this meeting, continue with the processes of finalizing that meeting actually sits tomorrow evening as scheduled at 6:30. And then I think finally, of course, is to say, I think all the logistical matters have reached colleagues for the oversight visit to the post office. And colleagues, I request if there's any information specifically that you want dealt with, which may ordinarily fall through the cracks, that you want us to deal with the post office, please send it through to myself so that we can advise the post office to pull out all the issues that we need to actually deal with. So those are some of the things happening. The three things that I wanted to bring to the attention of the committee. Thank you, colleagues.
Thank you, Chair.
So, colleagues, so we'll be in touch again. I'll communicate in our side office on developments. But tomorrow morning, we will not be having a meeting. And well, it was not a matter of our doing. So, apologies for that. All right, colleagues, under 1 minute.
No, just say thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you, colleagues. Have a good day. This is an early finish, 11:15, probably a record. Not that we chase them away. We usually finish early when we chase people away. All right, colleagues, do take care. We'll see each other on Thursday in Pretoria when we go to our oversight to the post office. Have a wonderful day. Take care and be safe. The meeting stands adjourned.